VOC Breakfast, weekdays 6 to 9 a.m.
Back to the topic. We joined on the line for her perspective by Nuran Osman, the director of the IHATA shelter. Nuran, assalamu alaikum. Shukran so much for your time.
Wa alaikum salam wa rahmatullah, Ashraf, and thank you for having us.
It's an absolute pleasure, and I think your perspective on this particular conversation is important. We talk about the instances, four recent instances of females, women being allegedly responsible for crimes related to children. We talk about Kelly Smith. We talk about Tiffany Meeks, who is an accused at this stage. We talk about the woman that is alleged to have kidnapped Muhammad Imad Shamar. We talk about, of course, we mentioned Tiffany Meeks, and there's one other. It's the teacher at Harvester Primary. Now, in your line of work, essentially taking care of mothers and children, women and children who find themselves the victims of abuse. Do these sorts of stories change the dynamic for you?
No, it doesn't, unfortunately. And this is a very sad part about filicide, is that even some of the women we work with have violated their children. One of the things that I addressed very early on with the intake of new female clients is that they hit children. I've seen mothers, for example, who bite their children, who pinch their children. And so we have very clear rules and policies in the shelter around how children are to be treated and how children are to be corrected. But it's a strange thing, because I read an article recently that said children who are not shown empathy are unable to show empathy as adults. And so if, for example, you... say you were not shown any empathy as a child, later on you can commit serious crimes and not feel anything, and this is very worrying.
These cases, in your view, do you view them as isolated and coincidental, or does it speak to a broader problem, in your view?
It speaks to a broader problem, Ashraf. I mean, I want to say that in communities are changing. I loved earlier when you and Lushe spoke of grannies and mummies and aunties, everyone being active in our lives. Where I work on the Cape Flats, there are few families that are united. There's a lot of social isolation. There's a lot of stigma. There's mental health issues. There's so many things. And so families are torn apart, but also families have absolutely no or little idea on how to resolve conflict. So very high levels of conflict, screaming, swearing, fighting is the order of the day. And it's almost normal to swear at your children. One of the things, for example, that our CEO, Mr. Faisal Porter, here, banned from the facility, and excuse me for the vulgarity, but some of the mothers were calling their children marksholes. And a child is not a marksole. It's a beautiful gift from God. So it speaks to a broader problem. It speaks to a lack of a lot. It speaks to social issues related to poverty. It speaks to structural and in-house violence. It's crazy. I could go on speaking for days, I think.
Yeah. I guess in a broader sense, the traditional way in which we viewed abuse, particularly as it relates to children, would be that men would be the perpetrators of those abuse, or of that abuse, and whether that's societal understandings, whether it's based in any statistics or fact or whatever it may be, that can be debated. But I think the broader understanding was that we'd fear, the role of men in the lives of our children, essentially for being at the risk of various types of abuse. And I'm wondering then if, considering that women have been viewed as victims in the past, if they should be viewed differently, or if it's just, as mentioned earlier, certain circumstances that unfortunately are playing itself out in society today that's contributing to a worsening of an already difficult situation.
You know, a couple of years ago, at Manenberg Steps, the IHATA shelter was working with Brigadier Joseph, and I'm not sure if he ever published his research, but he did some research around you know, the highest crime committed in Mannenberg, for example, and he found that it was common assault. It was within households, within families. And so we thought it was going to be men abusing women, and so, you know, he has got involved. But we actually realized that many of the women, for example, in Mannenberg are employed and many men are unemployed. And so because women had economic power, you know, things were volatile at home. And then we started exploring issues of parenting and issues of gender relations, because women were now wielding power, men were feeling worthless. There's also a very high incidence of gangsterism in the community. So it increased violence. But what he found interesting was it was female on male violence, which was very shocking. So I think that there are many things that we need to consider. Traditional gender roles are changing. Or is it possibly that, you know, social programming has always said that men are perpetrators and not women? I'm very, very concerned about boy children. And often the boy children who come and stay with their moms in our center are children who have been violated. But nobody talks about it. Also, for a long time in South Africa, men couldn't report rape because there was no such thing, or because there was social stigma, or because there was fear that the desk sergeants would stigmatize them. There were so many reasons that men just didn't report violence. So now, do we have a true statistic of violence on men? I don't know. Do we have a true statistic of violence on boy children? Do we assume, for example, that women don't molest boy children? And that's, you know, the issue with the matter allegedly at Harvester Primary. Who was guilty? So I'm not sure if it's social programming. I'm not sure if it's the, excuse the sound in the background, it's the children at the office. But I'm not sure if it's social programming. Is it how we view the world? Have we just accepted that men are always the perpetrators? Oftentimes, even here in the shelter, when we look at reintegration and we invite the, you know, in inverted commas, the male perpetrator to come and engage our social workers, our life coaches, so that, you know, husband and wife can find themselves again and we rebuild the families. In these sessions, we often find that the wife was in fact the perpetrator. That is her.
What?
The wife is diagnosed with a mental illness that causes her to be incredibly violent, and that the children actually have a better relationship with dad.
What advice would you have to someone like Luche, who's sort of questioning, you know, broadly? So who can I trust with my child? If my assumption in the past was that I could trust my child with a mother who has a child with her, and perhaps that dynamic is not as clear cut and straightforward as perhaps we had perceived it to be in the past. What advice would you have for someone like her?
When Luche spoke, Ashraf, I had tears in my eyes, because as a mom of four children, two of them young adults now, but two of them minor, I felt that. And, you know, unfortunately, Luche, I'm that mom. I don't trust anyone. You know, I trust my mom and my dad and my children's dad, and that's probably as far as it goes. And so, I, unfortunately, because of where I work, because of what I see, remember that I've also worked in the juvenile section at Baltimore Prisons, I see many, many things. I don't trust anyone. My daughter loves football, and so I go with her. My teenagers used to say, Mom, can we go to the mall? I'm going with you. Can we go here? Can we go to the beach? Can we go there? I'm going with you. Because a lot of violence against children happens right within the household.
And
this is very worrying.
And of course, as we've discussed, it's not necessarily as clear cut as saying, you know what, you look at Uncle Ashraf and be careful around him. It could be an Auntie Luche as well.
Yes. What about, for example, sibling on sibling violence?
Yeah.
So you've got an older brother who violates his younger sister, or an older sister who violates a younger brother. I read of a case many years ago where, for example, the eldest girl in the family had been violated by the grandfather. And so she was very sexually aware at an early age, and no one understood why. And at that point, we were not seeking help with mental health and counseling and social, life coaching and those sorts of things. And she then perpetrated against her younger brothers. This matter was only revealed much later, when adults intervened because there was antisocial behavior and there was high conflict among siblings. Only later was there the realization that granddad had violated someone and someone had violated the siblings. But we keep these things hush hush in families.
Yeah.
Oh, please don't lay a charge because you don't want to see your grandfather go to Portmore. Please tell me why not. It's scary. So I'm that mom, Luce. I don't trust anyone in a hurry. Yeah. And sleepovers, not for boys, not for girls, no one. You can come sleep over at my house. I'm a safe mommy. Mm. But I'm not letting my kids sleep at anyone's house.
Yeah. And certainly, while I think many would appreciate this conversation, I think it's also testament to, you know, the condition and the state that our society is in, and that should concern us as much as, you know, the conversation that we're currently having, because it also speaks to how far we've deteriorated as a society, to perhaps to the extent that we haven't realized before. For now, though, Noraan Osman, shukran so much for your time, as always, and sharing your insight with us.
Thanks for having us. Have a blessed day.
Inshallah. Assalamu alaikum.